Today's conversation is one of inspiration, vulnerability, honesty, and has left me feeling truly, truly motivated and inspired to get in the driver's seat of my life and business. I sit down with Inbal Rodney, and the conversation today took quite quickly an unexpected turn when Inbal describes her upbringing and what impact that had on her life. She is somebody that comes across as incredibly knowledgeable, confident, but that wasn't always the case. So she shares honestly how she's built it and what she does to continue to move forward, even when she has self-doubt. She is somebody that I could have listened to and chatted with for much longer than the hour that I got to sit with her today, and somebody that I know I would like to have on the podcast again. So let me know if you would like her on the podcast again, because it's not often that you sit down with somebody that is so open to sharing her life journey. And it's truly inspiring. So it's left me feeling really upbeat. And I know that you're going to get so much from the conversation today. So now over to Inbal. Inbal, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. I'm absolutely delighted to have you on as a guest. Now, can you just give myself, the audience, a bit of an overview into your very interesting career journey? What got you into tech? What got you interested in AI? So I'd love to hear your backstory. So Inbal, over to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Georgie. It's a pleasure to be here. About me, where do we start? I deal with technology and with making technology accessible, with helping people adopt technology and make the most of it. I started my career as a software developer. So that's what I did at uni. I learned how to write code and I loved it. But very quickly into my first roles, I discovered that my happy space, my happy place, is where I'm going to meet users and show them how to use the software we've just developed and hear from them what they actually need. And then I come back to our team and go, hey, do you know they're actually using it this way and that way, and that's what they need. Let's make that for them. And then going back to the users. And I found that my happy space is between the software and the users. And that's where I thrive. Right now, there's AI, but AI is not really my space. You know, any technology is my space. It was cloud 10 or 15 years ago, and then it was automation, and now it's AI, and tomorrow it will be something else. But it's all about playing with the technology, understanding the technology, and then going, hey, people, we can all use it. Let's get started. Let me show you how.
I think that's absolutely fantastic, because that's exactly what I preach. And but look, you do come from a technology background, okay? So I'd love to sort of dive in first and foremost to young Inbal studying software engineering. I can imagine that was quite interesting. So where did the idea to study software engineering come from? Because, you know, a while ago, even when I reflect on my own career, my younger years in school, STEM wasn't really a thing that was discussed. I didn't have any role models in tech. So I didn't even think that could be a career path for me. So how did you go into software engineering? Did you have a role model? Did you have an interest? Talk to me about that.
That's a really interesting question. I don't think I've ever told these stories to other people who are not in my personal sphere. I was not into technology. I didn't know much about it. I didn't have my own computer. I grew up in the 80s, so most of us didn't have our own computers. So I didn't have much exposure. My brother had one of those very first PCs, and we were able to write programs in BASIC that wrote our name on the TV. And we were so excited to see our name on the TV. But myself, I saw him do that, but I didn't have much to do with it myself. My school didn't have computer science. I didn't really finish high school. But I grew up in, because younger years were complicated. I grew up in Israel. And in Israel, we all have to do compulsory military service. And as part of that, when we're 17 years old, they take us and test us and assess what we're good for. and we can make some requests as well. And I made my 3 or 5 priorities of what I would like to do in the military. And I didn't get any of them. They took me into computers, into software. I had no idea what it was. I didn't know what I'm doing there. Other people in the class were really into that and knew a lot. But in that first class where we were explained, this is the keyboard and this is the thing and this is where the floppy disks go in, I took notes because I had not hardly the background that some of the others had. But I really enjoyed it and I found I was good at it. And I found that I enjoy the logical thinking and the way we take a problem and break it into components and how we make things reusable and how we can approach a problem in different ways. And the difference between thinking about the problem from the software engineering side, which is how do I model the data and the flows, and looking at the problem from the user side, which is when do I need this data? What do I need this data for? And how do I want to see this data in what ways? And so I really enjoyed it. I found out I was good at it, but I also really, really enjoyed it. And then they positioned, once we finished our 6-month intensive training to make us into software developers, I was positioned in the Air Force and started working on software for aircraft maintenance, which was really interesting and got me installing the software for our first users in hangars under jet planes and where the jet planes got maintained. So under the wings of the jet planes and teaching the maintenance people how to use the software to manage the maintenance of the aircraft. So it was really interesting and complex in all sorts of ways. And when I finished my compulsory service, I went into industry, into working in software development startups. And that's where I really found that niche of, or that area of going around talking about our software to our users, coming back to the software developers and going, hey, do you know, they're not really using it like we thought they would. What they really need is this. And then bringing that back. So being that bridge or that interpreter really speaks to my heart.
I'm so glad I asked that question. I did not expect that answer. That's absolutely fascinating. I love hearing stories and I think it's always fascinated me how so many of us are so shaped by our childhood experiences and how that was compulsory, but look at where it's led you and all of the benefits that have come from that. There's such a fascinating, is it still the same now? Is that still how, what happens? Like people have to still go into military service. Is that still a compulsion?
In Israel, military service is compulsory for everyone. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a very unlucky circumstance. And the things that are happening are very, very difficult these days. I personally find that often I'm uncomfortable even sharing where I grew up because everyone's got opinions and horrible things are happening. And it's a very difficult space. So it's funny that when you ask that, I notice myself thinking, am I going to tell her? Am I going to tell her? They're all going to know. And now they know.
I think as well, it's owning your story and it's look at where it's brought you today. And I can imagine you have just this different sort of like, I guess, capability and outlook on life. And that has really stood you in such good stead. And what I also would, I guess, when you were speaking then about not knowing much about tech in that classroom where everyone was more ahead of you, those are the moments where we're shaped and we're made and we're born almost in those moments. And I can imagine now anytime you're in a situation where you're challenged or you feel uncomfortable, you can tap into that inner strength because you've gone through it beforehand. And I think that's so much power in that. And I think that I would say to you, own that story because that is so powerful and it's different and it makes you memorable. And I think that we could all do with leaning into our authenticity a bit more because that's what makes us human and people want to work with people that they know, like, and trust. So I think that's such a powerful story. So thank you so much for sharing.
I absolutely agree. And I think when I look back and I go, all right, I started there and there were all these kids that had their computers and knew how to write software and I felt very behind. But when we're now, what, 30 years later, 30 something years later. And if I look back, what I know now is that in order to be successful in this career in technology, it's not just about how well you can code or how many languages you can code in or how fast you write your code or how efficient. It's not just about those things. It's about how well you can communicate your ideas and how well you can listen to people and really hear what they're saying and really understand their problem and model it into smaller problems and capture that well. And how well you manage projects and how well you manage your time and how well you work within a team. Because we only want to build bigger things. We can't build them alone. And how well you learn and adapt, because technology changes so quickly all the time. What I learned there, ancient history. And so this success in this kind of career is not just about those things that I thought I was behind on. In that first class, it's not just about that.
Amen. That's fantastic. I love that you just said that, because this is exactly what I preach all the time. And I was reading some stats the other day about how we're going to need 200,000 Australians to career pivot into tech. Mm-hmm. And so many people are saying, well, I don't have a software engineering degree. I've never coded in my life. And I'm thinking, no, you don't need to, because exactly what you've just said then. So I'd love to get your opinion on this. I feel like you are so primed to answer this in such a beautiful way. You've mentioned communication. You've mentioned the ability to be able to really listen and take back these problems and turn them into solutions. What are some real, I guess, I'm going to call them soft, but they're more critical skills that people could really focus on that you think is maybe lacking in tech? Maybe some transferable skills that maybe women especially have in their current careers that would be really, really beneficial in the new world of technology?
Yep. That's a really interesting one. And so when we think about a career in technology specifically, it's unlike other careers when there is a very clear path. You know, you're a doctor, there's 7 years of this and then 3 years of that and then 5 years of this and there's a path. And if you're maybe a lawyer or an accountant, you maybe many want to become a partner and here's the path. And there's these traditional paths. There isn't such a path with technology. It's a very open field and we can just go and make our own path and find our own way and position ourselves how we want to position ourselves. And what ends up happening in technology is that confidence plays a really big part. And if there's two people in the room that are just as good in coding, okay, but one is a lot more confident and goes, do you know what? I can sell this. I'll go and set up a business. And another goes, oh, I'm a really good coder. What would you like me to code? What would you like me to do? I will do that and I'll do it really well. They're going to get very different places. Now, I'm not saying necessarily that the first one is going to be a lot more successful, because maybe they're also a bit detached from reality and maybe they're not good listeners and all of those things. But there's a mix of things a mix of skills that we need to bring to the table. To be successful, and successful is not just make a lot of money. Successful is, I think, being in a place where what I do every day brings me joy and I bring joy to other people, right? We contribute. We do great things. We string great energy in our days with other people. And so we were talking about skills. And so skills and maybe traits, right? And I think specifically for women, a lot of it comes from confidence. So I studied computer science in the 80s, and I was often the only woman in the room, girl or woman in the room. So maybe after high school, in the 90s, I was often the only girl, often the only woman. When I think of my university degree, I never had a female teacher, instructor. They were all guys. And so when I looked at them, it was a bit hard to think that one day I can be like that, because I don't look anything like them. And I remember viscerally the sense of, I'm a bit of an infiltrator. I'm not supposed to be here. And one day someone will get me and go, what are you doing here? get up. Not your room. That sense that it, even though nobody ever told me that it's not my room, but there was that feeling that I'm not meant to be there. I did have a few times when people actually said things that should not have been said just because I was a woman in the room, which was completely irrelevant to what we were working on. And so I think that confidence, and in the case of women, often a lot of people, men too, but women more endemically, have this lack of confidence that actually below where they should really see themselves. You know, some of us underestimate ourselves, some of us overestimate ourselves. And so often I see it with women where they minimize themselves, see themselves as lesser than what you and I looking can see, right? And so I feel like the greatest thing we can do for each other is hold those mirrors up to each other and say, hey, Georgie, when I look at you, here's what I see. And name all those great traits that I'm seeing, because that can be the biggest thing that will change your career and will enable your career in tech. So circling back, it's not a field where there's a clear path. It's a field where we make our own path. And to draw a good path, we need to believe that we're good enough to walk that path and that we deserve to walk that path. And that's a gift we can give each other.
I'm smiling here if you're not watching this on video, because everything you've just said then, I've actually just spent, this is actually, you're going to be the first person that knows this. I've began writing a book.
Congratulations.
On career. Thank you. It's been in my mind for a long time. I'm finally sitting down, but it's exactly for everything you've just said then, career confidence. I believe it is the foundation, that sense of self, that sense of trust, that is the foundation of everything that everything else is built on. Because you're so right, that analogy you just used of two women, one could be like, yep, give it to me, I'll get it done, I'll solve it. And the other woman could be, oh, I'm a good coder, but just tell me what I need to do. And I have stood in rooms, as I'm sure you have as well, where women have undervalued themselves, not spoken up when they want to, played small, shied away, you know, just almost just don't want to be seen. They don't want the recognition. And we can't afford to do that anymore. We can't afford to do it because the world is changing at such a pace around us. So many jobs are going to be obsolete in the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. The world's going to look completely different in the next 10 years. And all of the opportunities I see in the future are going to have some kind of technical component to them. We can't afford to sit on the sidelines of our own lives and careers anymore. So I would love to know, Imbal, how you have gone about building your own confidence over the years. Were you confident as a child? Has it been something you've had to really work on? And when you're in those moments of doubt, which we all feel sometimes, when we're feeling like an imposter, when we're stepping outside of our comfort zone a bit, how do you remind yourself that I've got this?
I wasn't always a very confident person. I'm being told that I come across very confident. Part of it comes with age. Part of it comes from culture, more of a Mediterranean culture of being quite direct and to the point, which I used to feel uncomfortable about, and now I see as an advantage. A lot of it comes from the need to survive. Money and power give us safety in the world. I, as a child, remember knowing that I will never be dependent, that I have to be independent in my world in order to be safe in the world. And when I look at women around me, and primarily the traditional way of women not earning their own money, not having their own money, and being dependent on someone, as an adult, being dependent on someone, for me, feels like being unsafe in the world. And I know that's not always true, and I know that I'm generalizing, but for me, that always was a thing I'm not going to agree to, that I was always going to earn my own salary, I was always going to be independent in my world. So if I need to get up and go, I can get up and go. And I did at some point get up and go. But regardless, I needed to know that I can get up and go if I need to. That I'm not dependent, I'm not stuck, I'm not trapped. I'm a free person. And what comes across as confidence, which probably now, I'm turning 50 this year. Whew. Part of what comes across with confidence as confidence is comes with age and with getting through enough things that you go, do you know what? I handled that. I'm good. But at a younger age, it came from, I got to do this because I need to earn money. I got to do this because I need that position, because that will keep me safe in the world, because that will give me independence, financial freedom, financial security. And financial freedom, I'm not talking about being rich and not having to work. I'm talking about not depending on anyone else so I can make my own choices, so I can have a roof over my head that I am paying for, and I can buy my own food, so I am not dependent and I'm free to make my own choices of where I want to live, who I want to live with, where I'm going to have my kids. And I don't need to compromise my personal safety for a roof or for food. Right? And so part of this confidence comes from a drive of, I need to earn, and I need to earn well. And then later in life, it turns into, do you know what? I deserve to earn, and I deserve to earn well. Later in life, I started feeling, well, there's a lot later to come still. Wow, sounds like I'm 70, I'm 50. But I guess in the last decade, I started seeing the value that I bring into wherever I work or conversations I'm in or the rooms I get into, and seeing the value that I see on other people's faces that they received from me, and going, do you know what? I make a positive impact. I bring value. I am valuable.
I think that's so beautifully put. And it reminds me of something I heard the other day, is that sometimes we're pushed and sometimes we're pulled. Mm-hmm. And I think in the beginning of our life, like you, I moved to Australia with a rucksack when I was 23. I had nothing. And it was a case of sink or swim. And I swam. And I swam fast because I had nothing. I had to make it work. The other option was go back to the UK and move back in with my parents, which I didn't want to do. So it was like a case of, I'm in a brand new city in a brand new country. I've got to make this work. I've got to figure this out. And that was the push. And that will get you so far, I think, that sort of drive to like, I don't want to be where I am now. So I've got to work hard to get to where I want to be. And then I think as I've got older, I then set more of an intention and a vision for how I actually want my life to look. And maybe that's come because I've proven to myself that I can do things, and I've got that stack of evidence to be like, well, you've got this yourself this far. Now, where do you want to go? And now there's a pull. Now there's a vision. Now there's something I'm working towards. And I think it all comes down to that why. And in the beginning, it can be to merely survive, just to get by. But what you do in those early years is you build those foundations of, I've got this. Oh, look what I just did then. And it builds that sort of confidence. And then you get to a point where you go, what do I want to achieve now? What do I want to achieve next? And that's where it becomes really exciting. But I think what you've just said then is just such a beautiful story of exactly that pull versus push, and how powerful it can be.
I think that there's something to be told about being intentional about building ourselves and our self-worth and our confidence and our sense of value in the world. So one of the things that I do, that I just realized recently that I do, but I have been doing for years, I do a lot of journaling. I don't keep the journals. They're there for me to process. It's part of my processing. Writing is part of my processing. But one of the things that I do in my journaling is acknowledge the value I'm learning about myself. Acknowledge, do you know how when something bad happens, we have a trauma? And we learn that that is dangerous, and we learn it in our body forever. I want to do the thing when positive things happen. I want to have positive trauma and to go, oh, I should always expect great when this when the world looks like this, and our bodies don't work like that, and our brains don't work like that. But we can try. And so I make an effort, or I don't know if I make an effort, it's a habit that I have of journaling to process difficult things, but also in order journaling to capture the good. When somebody says to me something good, that they loved my work, to stop intentionally and open my heart and breathe that in and, you know, let that sink into all my blood cells and flow in my body, because that is real. That is real. They just said it because they meant it. It is real. And when I have whatever success that can be, something I achieved at work or a connection that I made or something that just went well, that I feel I did well, to just stop and open the heart and breathe that in, because it's real. So that mirror that I love holding for other people to show them what I see when I look at them, I also try to take what they're saying or what the world is telling me and hold that as a mirror in front of myself and go, this is real, Inbal. This is how you are in the world, Inbal. Breathe that in. And so that's a swell of self-worth that builds inside and builds over years. And I feel like that's one of the things that happens when we turn 40 and turn 50. And I think that swell can get bigger and bigger and drive us from the inside going, of course I should be in this room. Who else? Right? Replacing the doubt of who am I to be in this room that I carried for many, many, many years.
Mm. Yeah, if I'm really truly honest, and you know, I'm always very vulnerable in this podcast, so this won't come as a shock to listeners, but it's just something I've really struggled with. I've always been somebody that set really big goals and expectations for myself, and if I haven't, and to be honest, they were probably totally unachievable. So when I haven't hit them, I've beaten myself up. And I even caught myself the other day, it'd been a really good week, but I hadn't quite achieved the goals that I'd set myself that week. I'd fallen short by a little bit. And I found myself zooming in on all of that things I hadn't achieved, when actually, like you just said then, I'd had a beautiful message from somebody that listened to this podcast to say how much it was helping them. I'd had another message from a woman that was being mentored by one of our big sisters to say how much it was changing her career. And it was just like, I almost completely disregarded that and just zoomed in on the fact that, yeah, but you haven't done this well. Mm-hmm. And it's still a real work in progress that I have to check in with myself. But I love what you just said then about not just journaling when things aren't going well and getting out your frustrations, actually journaling and having those sort of like heart open, heart centered moments of when you do get that sort of feedback, and just being like, allow yourself to really feel it and soak it up, because that's the building, I guess, the self-trust, the self-worth that you're talking about. And I think I know a lot of women that probably would fall into the camp that I fall into of like, we are kind of our own biggest critics, and we're so hard on ourselves, and we set these crazy expectations to be good employees, good business owners, good parents, good this, good that, the good girl, I guess, you know, which what we're programmed to be in school. So it's just really great hearing that you've gone on this journey and how you do it, because you seem like, I mean, I'm big on energy and vibes. You seem somebody that's very assured of yourself, confident, but in a beautiful way, really authentic way. And someone that's actually quite happy as well. Like, you seem joyful. And I can imagine that that's because you focus on all the good that you're doing in the world versus all the things that maybe you're not achieving yet, or you don't set these silly expectations on yourself. You lean into the good. Would you say that's quite accurate?
No, what's funny is that I don't really set much goals for myself, and I don't have plans, and I never had big plans. And I lived in five different countries, lived and worked in five different countries. And people often ask me about why I decided to do that, but I never decided to do that. I just show up and the day shows me some options and I go, all right, let's do that one. Let's see how that goes. Let's try this. I never had big plans. I never knew where my career was going to go. I don't have big plans at the moment. Things just happen, and I really enjoy that things just happen. And I have choice, because I have choice every day of, is it going to be left or right? Like, which way are we going to go today? I do have things I'm working on. I do have projects. But if a project, I think that when we think of our projects, I like to think about them a bit like a scientific experiment. So when people do a scientific experiment, when scientists do a scientific experiment, they're not attached to the outcome. They're not going to prove that it's that way. They're checking if it's this way or that way, right? Or they're trying something and maybe it works and they win. Or maybe it doesn't work and they learn something new and now they're a lot smarter than what they were before and they're going to share this knowledge with the world, right? So this is a bit how I operate. I try things and if they work, I go, oh, awesome, look, that worked. And if they don't, I try to go, oh, look what I learned here. This doesn't work because whatever, and let's see what we can do with that. So it's not that I'm not disappointed sometimes if things don't work, but I think that I very quickly move into that was a great experience because I learned this and that I now have and I can take with me. So there's a growth in everything. It takes time, but if you'll talk to me about personal life, if you'll talk to me about my divorce, if you'll talk to me about bad things that happened in my childhood, thinking about the conversations I have with my friends, you're not going to hear a lot of everything was shit. Because it wasn't. Yeah, it was hard. It was challenging. But I learned this and I became so much stronger at that. And I developed this ability and I met that person and I developed that network. So there's gold in everything. And I think that we can develop the habit, the thought habit of finding the gold. And journaling is a great way for me to find the gold. And the paper doesn't care. The paper can absorb anything. So I can go, yeah, bad, 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 bad. Oh, but that was nice. And that was nice. And here's the gold. And we're good.
I'm going to steal that into my own journaling practice. And I'm sure there's lots of women listening to this that's also going to take that and go, I like that. So, and I love what you said about treating things as an experiment, because what I also think that would do is then remove the fear of failure, because this is another reason why so many women don't change careers, go for that promotion, start a business, do whatever they want to do, because they're so afraid to fail. Whereas if you see it as, I'm experimenting, and if this doesn't work or I don't get the outcome that I want, which we shouldn't be attached to anyway, then I've learned something. There'll be gold in that. There'll be a lesson to be learned. So I think that is just so powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that.
It's hard to let go of being attached to an outcome. But one of the things that I learned to do is to just have levels of success. So I remember the first time that I went to speak on stage. I do a lot of public speaking now and I love it. But the first time I went to speak on stage, I had the opportunity. I had no idea if I'm going to be good or not good at it. I really wanted to do it for a long time. I remember sitting in conferences and going, I want to be there on the stage. Like, why does she get to be there and I don't? Like, what do I need to do? What's missing in me? What? Yeah. And then I got my first opportunity and I prepared and I hired a coach to teach me how to do it well. And I rehearsed and I was super ready. But just before going on stage, I gave myself three levels of success. I said success level number one is that I get on that stage, I do the thing, and I'm alive after. Right? That's success. Because then I'm turning from a person who never spoke on stage to a person who spoke on stage. And that's an upgrade. And I like it. Success level one, I'm alive after. Success level two, I thought would be that I'll do it and that someone will approach me after and I'll get a gig, like a job, like a project from it. And success level three was going to be that I will do it, I will live after, and someone will tell me it was awesome, will you speak at my conference? Like another speaking gig. And I think that in that one, I got level two. But all of these levels are success, level one, two, and three. None of them is failure. The only way to fail was to die halfway through, which I thought was going to be an option. It was an option. I'll just die of fear and that's it. But all of them were success. And I often do that when I get into new projects. I go, all right, success level one. I can tell you about one that I'm doing now. And I don't know how it's going to go, but I'm going to launch my first public offering. So a course, an online course where people can buy tickets and come be with me and do it. Or it will be either online or in Melbourne. like on site. And I have never sold tickets to anything. I speak in conferences, in large conferences, but I just come in. Somebody else got the people there. So are they going to show up to my party or not? I don't know. Maybe I'll organize the whole thing and no one will show up. Maybe. And so I don't go into it. And I do have things of how much I want to sell and how many tickets and how much money and how many a year I want to do. I do have some of those. But I do have my levels of success. And success level one can be that we've organized it, we tried it out, and we're alive. And maybe we learned that it's not a good idea and we're not going to do it again. But at least then it will get off my radar and I'll stop wasting mental energy on it. So that's success level one. Success level two can be that we'll have run it with a few people and not a lot of follow-up. And then we'll sit and think of how to do it better, we being me and my team. And success level three can be we fill the room, there's a wait list, we're doing the next one. They're all success. They all have gold in them. Even the first one, if I'll end up saying, look, public events are not great, I'm not doing this again, at least it will get off my annoying beating me that keeps telling me that I should do it and I haven't done it.
I think that is just so fantastic, having those three levels of success, because again, it just makes you go, oh, well, that's the baseline. That's sort of maybe where I'd like to hit the next one. Level three would be, that's outstanding. But it's like then going in with that, you're sort of going in with, I mean, guess slightly maybe less expectations, but that's also really, really important, because anytime we're trying something new, we don't know how it's going to go. And if we go in with these really overinflated expectations and we don't hit them, we might not do that again. But anything you do for the first time, you have to be prepared to suck. You have to be prepared to make mistakes, and that's just going to happen regardless. So yep. I think that's just such a powerful exercise. And again, I'm stealing that as well.
You can have it with my love. So it's not a success failure thing. It's just which level of success I'm going to get. That's it. And the first one is often, very often, the first level of success for me is I will be in a position that I've tried it and now I know better.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So tell me a bit more about the course and what you're working on right now, because I'm sure people are going to be fascinated with, you know, what you're up to at the moment, sort of where your sort of like career has taken you, and why this course and why now?
So things are going great right now for me. This has been my best year ever, and December was my best month ever, and now March has become my best month ever, and it's just growing and becoming great. And there's some alignment that's happening now where I'm surrounded by beautiful people, mostly amazing women in my business, in my team, the people around me, and things are just going great. And there's alignment between what I'm doing and what I'm enjoying doing. And I feel like showing up for work is just a great exchange of love. I go places, and somebody beautiful told me that my love language is technology tips, which it is. And so I go on stages and I teach people right now how to get started with AI. I teach leaders how to bring it into their businesses, and every other person how to actually get started and use it. And it feels like love to me, because people go, yeah, got it. I'm like, yes, that's great. And I receive a lot of love back. So it's beautiful. It's just a delight. The big change or transition that I'm trying to achieve now in my business is going from private programs to public programs. So private programs, that's me going into businesses and running programs in-house, which I do a lot of right now in Australia and New Zealand. Public programs is where I'm just going to run a program and people will show up, which seems like a huge step for me, because I have never sold tickets to my own thing. I've only ever been invited into businesses to run an in-house program or on stages where someone else organized a conference and brought all the people, and I just show up and have fun. I'm planning to experiment with doing online events and in-person events, which will be getting people started with AI, which is the biggest thing right now. And I think that the biggest thing that people can do for their careers right now is become AI literate. That's it. That's it. It's not about right now where we are end of March 2025, right now, it's not about finding the best AI tool that you're going to use. Most of them are immature at the moment. You're not going to find a great one. Like, they're good, they're fantastic, but they're not there just yet. Right now, it's not about redesigning your business that so that everything's AI and replacing the people in your team with AI employees. It's not right now. That's not happening today. Right now is about developing AI literacy so that whatever happens, we are the ones prepared. We are the ones who know how to use this technology. We are the ones who know how to drive this technology. It can enhance everybody's roles right now. Any person in any job or student, whatever you're doing, AI can enhance what you're doing, can help you do it better, can give you access to resources. That's a completely different topic, but can give you access to resources that other people maybe have just because they were born to a rich family and they got a personal coach, or they got access to better facilities, or they got access to knowledge that you didn't get access to, or to mentoring that you didn't get access to. AI can give this access to all of us. But it's only going to give it to those of us who get up and ask. It doesn't come to you and offer it. You go to it and ask. And if you don't know how to do that, you're not accessing all the resources you can right now. And I want you to. So it's all about getting people started. And the reasons that people don't use this technology that is so easy to use, it's extremely easy to use. So why are there so many people? I can tell you, I ask this question in rooms of 50 people, in rooms of 1,000 people, and there's still 25, 30% of the people in every room who have not tried it, and another 30 or something percent who are not using it every day. What's stopping them? So what's stopping them, in my view, is not knowing which tools to use, not knowing how to use them responsibly, and not knowing how it applies to their work. And this is what I try to give people. Come into the room. I'll show you which tools to use. I'll get you started. I'll show you how to do it responsibly so that you're safe, what to do with confidential information, all that sort of thing, how to verify results, that sort of thing. And let's look at your work and find where it supports you in your work, how it's relevant to your the things that you do every day. This is the course. This is what I want to give people. And I have been giving this to people in-house, so businesses bring me in and I run in-house programs and do that to all their for all their staff. And the results are amazing. So within, after two sessions, we get 95 of the people saying that they use it every day. This is what I want to use. This is what I want to see. It doesn't matter to me what use case it is for exactly. It matters to me that they use it every day. They're developing their literacy. They're developing their skill. And as that technology matures, they will be the ones with a lot of mileage who know how to capture, how to assess tools, you know, assessing a new AI tool. How are you going to know if it's good? It's like taking a car for a test drive. If you haven't driven other cars, you're not going to know if you like this car. You need mileage on all different things so that you can go, oh yeah, I enjoy how this one goes, how this one works, right? This is what I want to give people, and this is what I'm giving them in-house, and I want to start giving up publicly as well now.
It's so needed, this course, because you're so right. There's so many people out there that are afraid of it, that are burying their heads in the sand, thinking it's going to go away. You know, it's like, it's not, this is going to be part of our lives, just like the internet is, just like our smartphones are. This is here, whether we like it or not, is going to disrupt everything and everyone. And it's going to be the ones that get ahead, that start using it day to day, start to understand it, play around with it. Like, there's probably not a day that goes by now where I don't actually use AI, if I'm really honest. Like, so when you were saying things, how like it sort of, you can use it in your own industry. So if I reflect on, say, recruitment, one of the things that used to take so long would be putting together job descriptions. Now I use AI to actually record the call with the hiring manager. So I get all of his words or her words of like, this is what I want, this is what we're looking for. Then I put it into ChatGPT, say, that manuscript. From this conversation I've just had with this hiring manager, can you now give me a fantastic job description of what I'm looking for? Boom, within seconds, there it is. I'll add some things in, I'll prompt it a bit. The most perfect polished job description that would have taken me probably at least 20 minutes to go through. Because again, I'm writing notes, typing. Now I've got my AI installed in all of my Teams meeting. That alone has saved me so much time. And that's just one example that I use day to day.
Yeah.
So it's so exciting to see how it's going to continue to evolve and how we'll continue using it in our business. But I'm not one of these people that thinks I'm going to be replaced by AI. I think the people that are going to be replaced are those that don't use AI. I think when humans and AI work together, we can be so powerful. It's going to be, I think, really exciting to watch. So I'm excited by the future, but love to get your thoughts on the future. What are you excited about? What are you a little bit concerned about when it comes to our new world?
And look, like everyone else, I every so often stop and think, oh my God, they're going to take over. But until that happens, if that happens, I don't know. I go back to my usual, I don't have a big plan. I know where I stand right now and what can I see in front of me. And what do I think makes sense to position me best for whatever it is that's coming that I don't exactly know what it is. And I don't have that great control to change. I can't stop AI. I can't change AI. I'm here for the ride, right? So right now, I'm sure that what can position me the best is literacy, is to know what's going on. It's to be involved and to develop my skill, to understand the field. So I am aware of what's happening. So I understand what's going on, which means that whatever the next step is going to be, I will be well positioned to see what's coming and have the tools to do something about it. So my advice to anyone is just get in. Just get in. Start using, if it's ChatGPT, if it's Microsoft Copilot or Google Gemini or whatever it is. Like you said, AI meeting assistants that go into meetings and transcribe them are immensely powerful. So you're using them to create job descriptions. I imagine that it's not only saving you time. You described how it saves you time. I imagine that it can also actually increase the quality of your work, because it doesn't forget little things that people say. It captures everything that you could have maybe remembered 80%, but it remembers 100%. And you bring in your lens into things, and maybe you miss something or misinterpret something, but then you had someone else in the room, that meeting AI meeting assistant, that captured everything. And you go, oh, did they actually say that? I didn't know. Oh, where did they say that? And have that conversation. On that, a couple of little tips. If you bring in some job descriptions, and also for other people listening to this, because often if you just take something into ChatGPT or any AI and say, make me a job description or write me a thing, it'll be something quite generic and less impressive. But if you bring in some examples of job descriptions that you have written in the past and that you think are really good, and you go, write me a job description based on this transcript along the lines of these examples that I've given you, it will be much closer to how you do things, which is what we want. We don't want something new. We want more of you. And so that's one thing. The other one is just to throw out there that you may want to try Claude. I don't know if you have. ChatGPT is the most well-known, and it's the best, and it's amazing, and it's my best friend. But also, Claude is very good. Claude, as in the French name, is very good at writing. So a lot of it has a lot less, significantly less or fewer features than ChatGPT. ChatGPT has the most features. And if you're only going to choose one tool to develop your skills, it needs to be ChatGPT, because that gives you all the latest and greatest options. It's the playground with the most activities. But Claude is known to be better at writing. People like its style better at mimicking your style. So give that a go, and maybe you like how it writes better. I don't know. Just in terms of tips for people who haven't tried anything, AI meeting assistants are one of the best things you can do. And if you're only going to choose one tool to start developing your skills, just make it ChatGPT, because it's easy. AI meeting assistants that transcribe your meetings, the basic things we do with them is, yeah, summarize that meeting, find me the action items, write me a thing, job description, proposal, project plan, whatever it is that we worked on. But there's a lot more there, because if you, and I suggest you do, save all those transcripts into a folder. And some of these have an automated function that they will just save everything, all the transcripts as documents into a folder. You're now starting to build a database or a knowledge base of all the conversations you've had and all the words you've said. And if you now want to write a book, for example, how much of your book have you already spoken and you now have transcribed? How much of that can you now put into ChatGPT or Claude or whatever your tool of choice is and have a chat with it to brainstorm ideas for your book? From your own words, though, from Georgie's recordings and Georgie's words and Georgie's spoken things. So that vast knowledge source of all the things you've ever said, not ever, but recently, that can be leveraged into so many different ways. So if people do one thing, I always do this. I say, if you do one thing, and then I say three things. If you only do one thing, get yourself an AI meeting assistant and start using that to transcribe yourself and capture your words and get yourself a ChatGPT. One thing, two things.
Such solid advice. And you'll be proud because when I was just starting to think about the book, I uploaded the 150 conversations I've had on this very podcast, put it into a Google Docs, uploaded it onto ChatGPT. I've got my own, I guess co-pilot, you could call it right now. I was like, this is my voice. This is what I say. Can you give me some patterns that emerge from all these conversations? How is confidence built? Yeah. How is success? And it was amazing what it pulled out. And it just really helped me, I guess, mold the ideas in the book and what the themes and the patterns will be. So it's just such a powerful tool. And we didn't have this, a few years back.
How did we live before?
I don't know. I don't know. Honestly, if I had this book idea, and I've sat on this idea for a long time now, and I just thought, well, now's the time because all this technology is helping us, enabling us to do things so much better. And to just, I've got this knowledge in my mind, but it's like downloading it all now and putting it into AI and then giving it me back in some real tangible actions. And it's just fantastic. So yeah, everyone listening to this, do exactly what Inval says, use it in your meeting notes, pop it into ChatGPT and just play around with this amazing tech because it is transformational. It's really exciting.
And really I just want to say, there'll be people listening going, oh yeah, now everyone's just going to go to ChatGPT and say, write me a book about blah. And we're going to be inundated with shallow books about stuff that are all written by AI and have no soul in them. This will happen. It's already happening. People use AI to generate vast amounts of content. You can smell it from a mile. It's not amazing. But this is not what we're doing. This is not what you're doing, Georgie. You're using it to really bring yourself into a book that will have your soul in there, that will have your words and your attitudes and your thoughts and your ideas and your heart. And that will be a delight. So you're actually using AI to enable us to get more of you. So that is a beautiful thing to do. And that is what I want everyone else to be doing as well. Use AI to help us get more of whoever you are and whatever gifts you have to give the world or your business or your family or whoever it is that you want to give your gifts to.
Exactly. And it's very different from just going and using ChatGPT saying, pull me all the best articles on confidence and give me the overview. It's like, they're not my words. I didn't write those articles. I had nothing to do with that. That's almost stealing someone else's. That's going to make it very generic. Whereas if you said, pull me all the meetings that I've had over the last 12 months and, then put together something that, is a common theme that's now a business problem. And how could I solve this? What are some things that managers are saying over and over again, and what's the common theme here, and how could this be solved? And these are the ways we're going to get ahead in our career, so use it to our advantage. Let's make sure we don't get left behind. But Inval, I could honestly talk to you for so much longer. I'm going to have you back on the podcast and we'll do a take two. But where can I send people that want to connect with you, find out more about your course, your work? Where can I send them? Where do you hang out the most?
So there's probably two places. You can follow me on LinkedIn, where I talk about the things that I do. And if you want to hear from me regularly, I do send a weekly email where I try to keep it very short, a 3-minute video and a under 400 words summary on tips and things I think people should know. It's not a news thing. It's more of a, hey, give this a go. Try this, do this, how to do this. Yeah, tips and sometimes a bit more deeper thinking, but all things that I think people can use right away, all very pragmatic. And to go there, you go to inval.com.au/join. to join me. It comes straight from my email. So if you have questions or ideas or concerns, or you just want to send love, you can just reply and that comes straight to me.
We'll make sure that's in the show notes below. So I encourage everyone to sign up for that newsletter to stay in the know of what's happening in the world of tech and AI, and just to hear from Imbal, because I feel like you're such a positive energy in this world and we need it. We need voices like this, because I think there's so much fear that's circulating around what our future is going to look like, and your attitude and your stories and your energy around it is what we need in the world right now. So thank you so much for this conversation today. I've loved it. And yeah, please go and follow Imbal, and I look forward to having you back on.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Georgie.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thanks so much for doing that. And I can't wait to share the next episode with you.